So welcome. Thank you all for coming to this session. We're going to get started. My name is Dina Krieger. I am the founder of Choose to Be Nice. We are all about encouraging kindness and reminding us all that we have a choice about how to be in the world. Simple as that. If you'd like to learn a little bit more about us, feel free to stop by our booth in the exhibit hall.
Oh my God, my mother needs to pick up on that.
I'm excited to be here. I think this is my third year exhibiting, probably my eighth or ninth year attending the Mass Conference for Women. It's a great place to get support, peer networking, encouragement. It's a great place to be. So we're excited to get started. I want to thank you all for participating in this session called How to Impact Positive Change One Idea at a Time. We have an amazing hour in store for you, and I'd like to introduce you all to Lovie Ajayi. She is an award-winning
Ajayi.
Oh, you nailed it. Oh, I did. Great.
Oh, yeah.
All right, then. I did something right today. Thank you so much. She's an award-winning writer and digital strategist who thrives at the intersection of comedy, technology, and activism. A 13-year blogging veteran, she's the voice behind the respected blog awesomelylovey.com, where she covers all things pop culture with razor-sharp commentary and wit.
Razor sharp.
Her first book, I'm Judging You, was just released in September of 2016. With a passion for social justice and a love of shoes, check out the shoes. She co-founded the Red Pump Project in 2009 to raise awareness about the impact of HIV/AIDS on women and girls. Fantastic organization. Their work has earned them a congressional record from the U.S. House of Representatives and resolutions by the Illinois State Senate, as well as the City Council of Chicago. Please give her a very warm welcome.
All right, so really good to be here. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Everyone's good this morning? Everyone's feel okay?
Yeah.
First of all, it's hilarious because when she mentioned Red Pump, everyone was like, I hope you approve. Excited to be here with these amazing women. We are going to be talking about how to make impact one idea at a time. And my job here is to drive this conversation and make sure that we understand that this is more than just creating hashtags. Because I feel like we're in the hashtag culture where everyone's like, wait, what's going to be my hashtag? You don't even have the idea yet. So I think I was chosen to drive this conversation because of my work with the Red Pump Project. So I have on red shoes here for a reason. It's a very deliberate choice that I made because this nonprofit that I started in March 2009 to raise awareness about the impact of HIV and AIDS on women and girls started as one idea. I had a conversation with one of my friends when I was in college, and she was telling me about how she has 20 cousins who were living with her grandmother in Malawi, and that's because their parents had died from AIDS-related complications. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't know this thing was still a thing. Like, I had stopped hearing about HIV and AIDS, so I thought it was handled. Apparently not. And from then on, it was an issue that kind of stayed in my consciousness, and I started seeing how little conversation was happening around it. And one, shoes are my vice. Okay, like some people like to drink, some people like to smoke, I like to buy shoes. So I had the idea to incorporate shoes into this conversation because I felt like it was going to get the attention of women. And a friend of mine and I, we were having a conversation one day, and she was like, yeah, one of my friends just told me he's HIV positive. He found out he was HIV positive 6 months after his brother found out he was HIV positive. And I was like, how is their mom dealing with this? And realize that women are the ones who are always affected, even when we're not the ones who are infected. We're the caregivers, the aunts, the sisters, the mothers who have to deal with the fallout, the grandmothers who have to then take in young kids. So our idea was, we got this idea literally like February 27th, 2009, we were at this event talking, and I was like, well, I want to do something around HIV and AIDS and red shoes. Red is a power color. Red is the color of the AIDS ribbon. And she was like, well, you know, National Women and Girls HIV and AIDS Awareness Day is coming up March 10th. We should do something. So in GChat, because all great ideas start in GChat.
Do they?
apparently, for me.
Okay, good.
So while we were in G-Chat, I was like, well, she's like, well, you want to do something around red shoes, why don't we just, we should call it the Red Pump Project. I was like, I like it. And we created the hashtag before hashtags were a thing, like a huge thing. And we decided to do this campaign called Rock the Red Pump, which is to encourage women on March 10th to put on a pair of red shoes and talk about, okay, why do you have on these red shoes? What is important about it? What's the significance? And both being a blogger, I was like, okay, well, we should also get our blogger friends involved. So we sent out an email to about 25 blogger friends or 30 and said, on March 10th, no matter what it is you typically talk about this one issue. Here's some stats to use, put on some red shoes, take a cute picture. On that day in 2009, 135 bloggers ended up doing it. And Rock the Red Pump campaign became this thing that was larger than what I expected it to be. And people afterwards were like, so what's next? And I was like, oh, I didn't thought behind it. I was just thinking I was gonna put on some red shoes on March 10th. Everyone's like, I'm ready to be an ambassador. That year, we ended up having 40 ambassadors across 20 states doing Red Pump events and telling women, hey, come to our events, let's talk about HIV and AIDS, put on some red shoes. Let's have this very clear conversation. And what we found is that what we started just from the idea of wanting to generate conversation sparked interest and curiosity in people. And then it made it easier for people to do something about an issue that they weren't sure about before. So it kind of decreased the barrier. So, you know, a lot of things happen in the world and you're kind of like, I don't know where to start. Sometimes your idea ends up being what sparks people's heads to be like, that's where I'll start. So even if it means a Twitter chat about HIV and if you've gotten tested, even if it means walking in a room and wearing some bad red shoes and somebody's like, those are amazing, you saying, well, here's why I had them on. So this panel, we're gonna talk about how small ideas end up making big change and how we do that, what you can do if you have these small ideas that you want to eventually make big change with. So I am joined by these amazing, brilliant, and amazing shoe game rocking, because look at the, come on, all right?
We have a good shoe game.
The shoe game on this panel is actually impeccable, I must say. Tweet that. So I'm gonna have everyone introduce themselves, starting with Karen, and we're gonna go down the line. So Karen, who are you?
I am me. And I am Karen Kahn. I'm the founder and CEO of iFund Women, which is a crowdfunding platform for women. Everyone should go check it out. It is a place to fund your side hustle. That's my new way of describing it. Everyone here has an idea.
Yep.
Everyone here has what they think of like as a side hustle or a project they want to take on or a potential business idea or something that they've been like Googling for months. Asking their friends about, is this a good idea? Should I do this as a business? The answer is twofold. One, don't quit your day job because you need benefits and you need to support your family. Mm-hmm. But two, start your side hustle and get funding for your side hustle. So I don't know if side hustle is so PC, but really, everyone's got a side hustle.
Totally.
Yeah.
We're like a generation of side hustlers.
Exactly. So that's what I do.
Sweet. Rahane, what do you do?
So I'm Rehana Irani Famili. I'm really honored to be in the presence of these amazing women. I think they have offered a broader society goodness that I have not been able to provide yet. So I really hope that one day I will be at the same level of impact to the society that you guys are. But I'm the Vice President of Business Readiness for National Grid. I have grew up in my career making change happen within the organization. So the perspective that I bring today in the conversation is more about making change happen within your organization and leading inside your organization and getting your perspective heard.
And then we have Nancy.
Hi, I'm Nancy Frades. Probably better known as the Ice Bucket Mom. I am a mother, and that is my proudest and most daring title that I can tell you of what I am. So I'm also like the grandmother up here on the stage.
No, so stop it.
I have the classic pumps on. So let's just go from there with nylons. So, for those of you who don't know what they are. And honestly, what I just said kind of brings me to who I am. I'm a professional woman who went to college in the 70s and was in the corporate world during the 80s and made choices during my life. I got married at 22. I had my first child at 24. I owned my first home and had a mortgage at 24. And during our journey, my husband and I, which Rihanna and I had a really great talk about this, I've always had a really supportive partner in my journey who allowed me to make high-risk choices that kind of comforted me and helped me achieve what I wanted to achieve professionally while I also achieved personally. We very much had the same priorities. We had the same risk tolerance. And made choices to get to our goal and our vision, which was raise these three kids, be able to pay for them in college, and then continue to work for retirement. And that plan was going very well until March 13th of 2012, when my middle child, who had been a Division I player, baseball player at BC, and then played professionally in Europe, came home, got a job, moved out, and all three children, we gave them their cell phone bills. We went to spouse plus one on our health insurance, which you, I know most of you here think that will never happen, but it actually does. And we were empty nesters. And then on March 13th, 2012, we were told the most unacceptable thing anybody could ever be told, and that was that our son had ALS. And it was that moment that drives me every day, because guess what? I didn't know what it was. I knew it was bad, and I'm old enough to know that there was a guy named Lou Gehrig 75 years ago, but I didn't know that there had been no effective treatment and there was no cure, and that my son had 2 to 5 years to live. That night, 6 hours after he was diagnosed, my son, who had always been a leader, who had led not with talk and not with intimidation, but had led and captained and mentored with kindness and by example, once again set a vision. The one thing I think that that I would like to say was 6 hours after he was diagnosed, he said, he looked at his diagnosis as an opportunity. And I have to tell you, there were a lot of words that I was going to use for his diagnosis, and opportunity wasn't one. But he said, what an opportunity we've been given to change the world. We're going to get to work. So we started to get to work, and for 2 years, we didn't have an idea. We had a passion. We didn't choose our passion. It chose us. We had a leader who set a vision, who said, we have a compelling, relatable story. And we think if we tell our story and I document our journey, that we can get people to understand what this disease is. And we think once they understand it, they'll think it's pretty unacceptable too. So for 2 years, we just kept building momentum. And during the 2 years, he kept physically declining. And then, 6 months, this thing called an ice bucket was around the internet. And it's when my son was introduced to it that he got strategic and purposeful. And that's really what he did. He saw it, and he saw another opportunity. And he said, we're going to get to work. And that's what we did. And all the implementation of different strategic things on social media, I could talk ad nauseum about that. But what I really want to tell you is two things. Number one, opportunity. Be present because that's what he was. He was present 6 hours after he was given the diagnosis. Look, he could have wallowed in why me, and he could have gotten caught up in that, but he didn't. He looked at the challenge as an opportunity to change the world. Opportunity can be dressed in a lot of different costumes. You just have to be present enough to see when it comes by you. And then when he saw the ice bucket, that's when he saw a second huge opportunity. And we got to work. But it was his years of servant leadership that made the Ice Bucket Challenge go viral. So I'm here to impart as much wisdom as I can on you and tell you that at the root of an idea has to be passion. Either you choose it or it chooses you.
Yep.
And I look forward to sharing with these amazing women.
I mean,
oh my God. How do you follow that?
Okay. Superhero status. I think going back to your point of passion, mm-hmm. when people think about making an impact and doing the work behind this idea, that's essentially what pushes you past the wall. What are the brick walls that you've basically faced in doing the work that you do? I'm gonna start with you, Karen.
Okay. So my purpose in life is to propel the female economy. All the money for all the women right now, period. Like, that's really all I care about. I am not running a nonprofit, and neither should you. If you are, that's great. But, you know, if I had a nickel for every male potential investor who said, you should be a nonprofit, I'm like, really?
And then pat your head.
Yeah. I'm like, no, this is about making money for women. So, and my passion was fueled when I was working at, I worked at Google and YouTube for a long time. And when I was at YouTube, it was my job to marry big brands with big content creators. And this was back in 2007 when YouTube was the Wild West. Mm. And all these content creators were coming up and having huge scale and lots of millions of views. And they were all men. So my roster of creators to go out and sell were all these like skater dudes. And you know, big brands were buying into the skater dudes. And I was out there busting my butt, as a salesperson does, and doing eight-figure deals for guys. And it's when it hit me. Mm. I was like, I don't want to be working this hard for men. Like, they have it easy enough already. Mm-hmm. I want to be working this hard for women. And so that's where my passion got fueled. And so that's really why I Fund Women is what it is.
So in this process where your focus is very narrow, like, you are very clear. You want to make women money.
Yes.
Talk more about the challenges that you face in having this very narrow focus that really is about empowering women in a world that doesn't really want to.
Yeah, so there's challenges that women face in general around money. I mean, there's so many things. I mean, how long do we have? There's shame around money. You know, money is power. There's the relationship between you and your spouse, your partner, whoever you share your life with, if that's someone. It's there's a lot of things wrapped up in money. And so there's also this confidence gap, this huge confidence gap that women feel and face when thinking about starting their own businesses or doing anything risky, right? Because we're nurturers. Our first priority is, you know, take care of our kids, take care of our families, and anything outside of that, the risk is scary, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we do at I Fund Women, a lot of it is coaching. And mm-hmm. we do free coaching literally for anyone who calls us. You'll get, here's Kate, wave your hand, Kate. There's my mom. We just recruited my mom to be a coach because the demand has been overwhelming, and me. And literally, we'll get on the phone with you and we'll talk about, you know, what's your business idea? How long have you been researching it? What are the numbers? Does it, you know, does it actually make financial sense? What do you need to start your business? And then we kind of get you talking, and generally in answering those questions, you will overcome your own confidence gap because you'll realize, like, here's my business, here's the market, here's why people should care. By the way, this should be your crowdfunding pitch video. Here's who I'm selling to, here's how much money I need to raise, here's exactly what I'm gonna use that money for. And then you realize, like, oh my God, I have a thing. Like, there's a there. And you're off to the races. But a lot of times it just takes a conversation with someone with excessive amounts of confidence to get you there. It's coaching, right?
Yep.
And so that's my life's passion, is coaching women to get over the confidence gap. It's okay if you fail. It doesn't matter. You will learn a ton. A lot of times, crowdfunding is, first of all, is very hard. Has anyone here done a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo or a crowdfunding campaign? Mm-hmm. One. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. So it's actually really hard, because what it is you are hounding your friends and family and followers for money. You are literally panhandling from your friends and family and followers. Right? True. However, if you have a real idea and a real passion, and your friends, family, and followers know it because you've been talking about it over Christmas, you're like, I've got this idea, and you're talking to your sister-in-law, and then it's Easter, and you're like, I've still got this idea, and I'm doing this with it, and, you know, your friends and family know that you have this passion. They also know you have a skill set in said area, domain expertise. When you decide to do your crowdfunding campaign, they actually want to help you. They really do want to chip in, whatever they can chip in. $25, $50, it doesn't have to be a lot. But we did our first Kickstarter this summer before we started iFund Women. And I was shocked at how many randoms from high school, that chipped in because they had seen me on social media with this passion for the female economy and women. And so they believed and they chipped in and we made our goal. So, you know, what was my point? I'm rambling. My point was, Nancy, what's my point?
Well, your point actually dovetails very nicely with Kyla Harris said in there.
Thank you.
You're not.
Which was what, Nancy? Remind me.
See what you did there.
I was too busy tweeting about Carla. She's the greatest.
And actually, I think your point is also in terms of like how the economy of women, the idea of like change having to be tied to a nonprofit. Which,
yes.
That I actually want to go back to Nancy on.
Yes.
When the Ice Bucket Challenge was happening, we actually had this conversation right before we started this. Did people push you into like, hey, you should nonprofit this?
Well, when Pete was first diagnosed, they did.
Ah.
I mean, because we knew we had to raise money. So our cause was, first of all, we were told, so you get this diagnosis, just to put it in perspective, we get the diagnosis, and then 2 weeks later, when we're actually being counseled on the disease, they said, oh yeah, by the way, when he's in the throes of this disease, it's going to cost you $250,000 a year to take care of him. That's not going to be covered. So all of a sudden, you're emotionally destroyed, your family's destroyed, you can't walk or talk, and then they destroy you financially. So the point I was going to make with back to what Karen was saying was what Carla has said, because I was actually saying the words with her when she was saying it. If you don't ask, you're not going to get it.
That's right.
If you don't ask, and that's something in business coaching.
That's right.
So let me just give you a little background on me, because I got a lot of years.
You're OG.
I was in the corporate world and identified that I wanted to start my own business. And so this is way before crowdfunding. And I did.
There's still time.
I know.
You have plenty of time in your day.
To do crowdfunding.
Yeah.
But I did start a business when I was 30 years old and eventually sold the business when I was 40. And it was asking. You have to learn to those brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and cousins. Look, if you're passionate about what you're bringing to the table, you got to wrap them up. And the other thing that Carla talked about was relationships. Every day, you should be nurturing relationships.
Yep.
You should put a goal every day to meet two new people. You should put, you should time block connecting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not talking about liking something on Facebook or writing happy birthday. I'm talking about, because everybody does that now. Maybe 5 years ago, you were ahead of the
anymore.
Curve, but
people
you're not
get mad.
Anymore. I'll tell you one thing. Who remembers the last handwritten note they got from snail mail? Who remembers it? Yeah. You remember it, don't you?
Yes.
Write a handwritten note to somebody. Thank them for something that just happened. Congratulate them for something, because you never know in your journey when that person's going to come full circle back to you.
Yep.
And that's what happened with us. All those people that my family had interacted with over all the years, especially Pete, all circled back when this happened. And you want to know the root of the Ice Bucket Challenge was relationship-based. It wasn't Facebook. It wasn't Twitter. Even though we broke every record on every social media platform there is, we still hold them all. But guess what? It was person-to-person relationships. So I think
That's exactly right, and that's what we tell in the crowdfunding coaching. It's, yes, you have to be on social media and all of those things, but the way you're going to get the dollars is you pick up the phone and you call people, or you meet them in coffee, or you go to a meetup, or you meet a new person, and you give them your elevator pitch, and you get them engaged, and you get them involved, and that person's going to remember you. It's about IRL.
I think
they call it IRL now, Nance. Do you know what that is?
No. Oh, God.
In real life.
In real life.
Did you see the momentary, like, Nancy judging Karen, like...
No, there's no judgment. No
I'm
judgment.
Learning.
Exactly,
but
no
I
judgment.
Think you've got a perfect example. Lovey is her best... Lovey's best asset is Lovey.
Right.
That's true.
Right? What's your best asset? You. And if you're sitting in a room on a computer... If you're in a revenue-generating business, you're trying to raise money, whatever you're doing, if you're sitting in an office with the door shut looking at a computer screen between 9 and 5, or I go to bed at 8, but you might be out at 8, you've got to look at it, you've got to look at your business through the eyes of being social, because you're your best asset. So whatever that idea is only as good as how much you're going to put your face in front of it. Your face, not your fingers.
Ooh.
So if you find yourself...
That's a tweetable.
Face, not fingers.
Because if you
like
find
that.
Yourself sitting in a room on a computer, you're not using your best asset.
So, Rahana, I have a question for you. Like, you've been in the energy industry for 15 years. Like, what drives you forward? Like, what makes you care about moving the world forward and not having it crumble around you?
That's an interesting question. It's actually, it goes back, I guess, more to who I am than anything else. It's not the passion I have for my work. It's more the passion I have for solving problems. And it's been there since I was a kid. So my mom, working mom, she... worked, and when she was not working, I wanted all of her attention, and she had to do laundry, and we all know that process, right?
Right.
Wash the clothes, separate them, put them, and so I spent an afternoon figuring out how I could build this machine with my Lego and wood blocks that would sort and wash and fold and separate, and then created this belt that went into the room so the clothes came. And that was my solution for getting more time with my mom. And then I tried to convince them to help me buy the material to build it, and of course they didn't. Maybe they should have. Maybe I should have crowdsourced it. I was 5 or 4 at the time. But that comes to my corporate experience. So when I hear that our capital budgets are underrun for years after year, it's not the push harder or get more resources or do this or do that. For me, it's more peeling the onion, understanding what's at the core of the problem. Is it the capabilities that we're missing, or is it the process that we don't have? And so that has been what, in the last 15 years, helped me through the corporate ranks and through the positions in my life. So the world, I guess you... never know what you could have become if you don't try. Mm-hmm. And I think I've never been scared of failing. I've been scared of succeeding in a small world and not being able to have a broader impact. And so I try to do that every day.
That's important. One thing that I think happens is when people have ideas and causes and things that they want to do, support, sometimes you get overwhelmed. How do they get over that overwhelmed hump of, like, I don't even know where to start?
I think it's IRL. It all comes down to IRL. It really does. Like, I think that Facebook and Twitter and social media and the interwebs have overwhelmed our brains. And I think that's why the real things that get started, and Nancy, I'm sure you agree, the real things happen between two humans in a room together, or on the phone, or even FaceTime.
Yeah, it's very much so. I go around and I do a lot of speaking, and of course the first thing they want to talk about is the social media piece of it. Mm-hmm. But look, we changed the world. We changed the world at my kitchen table. So you don't need a lot of stuff. What you need is so this is another piece that I would talk about in the challenges and being overwhelmed. So when we got this diagnosis, Pete tells us it's unacceptable and he tells me he's going to change the world. I can't even stand up at this point, but he's going to change the world. So we went the next day, and the challenge was how much needed to be changed. I mean, no treatment, no cure. We didn't even know where to take him. Where are the best doctors? Because, of course, being a mom, you get the diagnosis. What's your first thought? Is, well, we don't care how much it costs. We're going to where we're going to fix this. Because as a mom, you want to fix it. And we find out it's Boston. All right, that's how bad it is. We live in Boston. We didn't even know that we're the epicenter of ALS research and physicians.
Thank God.
Right in our backyard. I mean, we're fairly enlightened people, and we didn't know. So right. Talk about being overwhelmed. We're like, how did we not know this? Everybody must not know this. We found out that the community was fragmented, such a small community, and it was completely fragmented. It was completely underfunded. The disease wasn't in the public consciousness. The disease wasn't on anybody's radar. So being completely overwhelmed was an understatement. So the first thing we did is we looked at what could we bring to the table. Look, as a mom, my first thought was, I'm going back to school, I'm going to med school, I'm gonna figure it out myself.
Oh my God, I love that.
And then I realized I took a freshman core course at BC for science and almost failed. So I'm like, not gonna happen.
You're like, plan B.
I can't exactly. Even plan B. So it's like, okay, so what can we do? Well, we had been entrepreneurs. At the end of my career prior to ALS, I was a business coach. I knew how to build a brand. I knew how to build a business. So we said, this is a brand. This is a brand. Mm-hmm. This disease, we're going to attack it. So what we did is we chopped away at that big rock, that big challenge. And we started to say, okay, we pieced it out. What were the challenges? We looked at it very analytically. What were the challenges? Okay, science was a big challenge. Nope, not going to do science. Okay, well, we can pick up the phone and we can ask people for money, right? We don't care. We've been business people. We'll pick the phone up, right? Well, it's going to take us an hour on each phone call to explain to them what the disease is. Okay, well, that's not a priority. So awareness, branding. And we just kind of stayed in that lane.
Yep.
Because once we found what our skill set was and what we could bring to the challenge, being overwhelmed kind of came right down to, okay, if we're here and we do this, then this will happen, and then this will happen. And that's exactly what we did. So being overwhelmed is a huge roadblock to any passion and any idea. So take a step back from being overwhelmed.
Yep.
Be very clear on what your vision is. Why are you doing this? And I will be perfectly honest with you. In our situation, money was the biggest piece, right, for the cause, but it wasn't what we were doing. We just wanted to save our kid. That was our agenda. Be very clear on what your agenda is and where are you going. Where are you going here? And then start chipping away at it.
And what your core skill set is. That's what I just...
What your skill set is.
Like, what are you good at?
Don't be something that you're not.
Yep.
Right.
Don't be something that you're not. Being authentic, I will tell you, we were talking about TED. There was a couple of speakers in there who have done TED Talks. And I did a TED Talk literally 5 weeks after the Ice Bucket Challenge. And I think it's been fairly successful. And I think one of the reasons that it's so successful is that I'm so authentic. Look, I've been authentic since day one of this diet.
Be yourself.
Be yourself.
Yep.
And when I got up there, the passion just oozed out of me because I'm very secure and confident in who I am. And I think that goes back to your point about the confidence gap.
Yeah.
Is that analyze yourself, look at who you are. I think you lose confidence when you try to be something that you're not.
Or you ask too many people's opinions.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's a really good point. Go ahead.
But at the same time, I think something that I've seen happen over and over again is that we have a extreme sense of ownership of our idea, and we don't, a lot of times, we don't let it free. And I think with an idea, it's like a fine piece of art. You have to work it and you have to rework it. And by the end of it, you might not recognize what you started with, but it would be a lot more profound and it can have a much larger impact. And so I think I definitely in my world, what I have seen is we hang on to our ideas for a little too long. Talk about it with your confident group of people, your friends. Be open to changing it and refining it. And then once you got something that you thought it's at a quality ready for a prime time or a hashtag, let it free.
Yeah.
Let other
Spoken
people...
Spoken like a true engineer, but you're right. She's absolutely right. It's true. I mean, I did not start out being the CEO of iFund Women. We pivoted from our earlier startup, which was a video company, which is still going, but this is really the focus now. Mm-hmm. But we iterated and iterated and iterated, and letting go of your first baby, your first startup, is hard. Yeah. You're right.
And I think another word that I would use in this conversation is leverage. We're all a little too slow to use leverage.
That's true.
No, we're talking about your skill set. Well, then you got to leverage out what you're not good at, because you're going to be spinning your wheels. So in our very, very simple exercise, so we looked, we knew now we made the choice. We had the vision. We knew we were going to increase awareness. Okay, we need a website. That was the first thing. We need a website.
Yep.
If I was going to build a website, I'd still be building it. So we looked, I call it the power of we. That's what I term it now. We looked at what was the power of we. Well, you know who the we was? It was my brother. It was my sister. It was my brother-in-law. They all came. I'm the oldest of four. My husband's the oldest of six. They all came, sat around a table. Well, my brother-in-law is a web designer.
Boom.
Okay, you're going to build the website. My other brother-in-law is an accountant. He said, I'm going to open up the trust so that we can start fundraising. My sister's a graphic designer.
Yes.
Logo. Hello. You're building the logo. Okay, logo. Yep. I knew I could network. That was just kind of who I am and what I've done. So I started networking, picking up, getting to know all the players. Who are the players? I started making the list. Who do I need to meet? Right, in this world that I found myself in. This is a business exercise that we did.
Yep.
Do not take any, we knew it too, because we were in our late 50s when this happened, and we had a lot of years of business experience. So look, every single day, you're learning something. You'll never know when you're gonna use it. Use it, just categorize it, put it in there, because it'll come back. But that's exactly what it was. So we looked at the power of we. Did it cost us any money? No, didn't cost us any money. But we had to leverage out to people who could do things much better and much quicker than we could.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly
you were running
how
a startup.
That's exactly how you morph your idea as to where it could go.
But I think a lot of this also speaks to expectations that women have. Mm-hmm. Are things that are dropped at our feet. We're expected to always be the Jill of all trades. You know what I mean? And these are the mistakes that you make. Like, even when Red Pump started, I'm a type A control freak. Surprise!
Shocking.
Shocking. Shocking, okay? The people who start their business are typically type A control freaks, okay? Like, so you...
It's true.
But you fall into the hole of wanting to be everything for your business. And then it bottlenecks things.
That's right.
That's right.
And when you start something like a challenge, or just you want to do this thing that's going to hopefully make a difference, you can't be everything.
You can't.
You're going to be exhausted. Like, I remember the nights of me being up till 5. I designed our first logo.
Yep.
I designed our first website.
Yeah.
I'm a branding strategist, so the branding was easy for me to come up with. But I'm also then trying to figure out how to fundraise, which is not my,
nope.
It's not my forte,
right.
It's not my ministry. But I tried. But that first year was a bunch of key learnings.
That's
so
right.
That key of leveraging things around you, I think we're also going back to your initial point of asking, because you never get it.
Yes.
For those who are uncomfortable with asking, how do they cut through that?
It's hard. I mean, look, I'm a salesperson. Nancy, were you in sales?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously. For salespeople, it's easy. We are, you know, we are, my gift is I like people, I like meeting people, I like talking to people, I like listening to people. A lot of people don't have that gift, and that's actually interesting because... Well, listen, it's interesting, and it's something that we're grappling with on iFund Women right now. We've got 25 beta entrepreneurs, all female, on the platform, and I would say 7 of them are, you can tell that they're salespeople, because right away, money's coming in, money's coming
right.
in, money's coming in. And all of these women, we had 200 applications. We picked about 20 to 25. And we pick the best and the brightest. We have TED fellows. We have tech stars. We have women with massive street cred that are funding their side hustle
mm-hmm.
to see if it's an idea. So, but we've got a couple at the bottom of the pack who are not bringing in money. And they're the engineers.
yeah.
They're my scientists who are not comfortable dialing for dollars. They are not comfortable being social. They're not on Facebook that much. That's not their jam. But their ideas are amazing. So we actually just started yesterday with this thing called the Accelerator Pool that everybody can go to. It's ifundwomen.com/pool, P-O-O-L, and throw in some money. We are not a nonprofit, but all the money is going to go to the entrepreneurs who don't have the social skills or the wealthy FFF networks, mm-hmm. the friend, family, follower networks, right? That's a 1%. 1%ers have FFFs who can give to their crowdfunding. There's a lot of entrepreneurs who don't have wealthy FFF networks. So this pool of money is going to go to help along that group. So it's the group that they're not comfortable being social, they're not comfortable, and they never will. But they're just as worthy of an entrepreneur as I am, as mm-hmm. you are. So we're trying to help everybody along.
I think that's, and it's funny because you're calling it, you know, your skill set or not being social. I think one of the first things you should do, and I found this incredibly when I was in the professional world, is take one of those Abelson tests or take a test that, you know, that ranks you A, B, C, or D, or DISC, or whatever that is. We talk about being A personalities, and Brianna's an engineer, which we call in our world an S personality. When you know what your gifts are, because mm-hmm. you have gifts. And we again, here comes the leverage piece. So you can't pick the phone up. You can't make the ask. Well, maybe that's, but wow, I can't build a Lego thing that makes,
right.
that does laundry.
Me
so you've got to find either a team member.
Yes.
Or you have to pay somebody. And that's another problem, is that you want to, I can't pay somebody. Guess what? There are internship programs in colleges. There are high school kids that can do more on the computer in 5 minutes than you can for 5 days.
Fact.
And guess what? They're free. Or they cost $10 an hour. But I can't afford $10 an hour. I'm trying to start a business. Well, you can sit inside and not use your face and use your fingers, right? But if you're not revenue producing, or you're not getting the FFFs, or you're not getting the investors, or you're not getting people who are going to aid in pushing you forward, you're losing money.
Just need to find a partner.
You need to find a partner
that can do it.
Or fake it.
And the way
people, no, I'm serious. Because people that have worked with me, a lot of them, they can't believe that I'm a very introverted, really prefer my peace and quiet.
Yeah, good for you.
But that's what I have learned is I can't sell to save my life. I can't. But what I can do is to create trust. But I still need the FaceTime relationship.
Yeah. She can't even say it. I still need to meet the people. You do. So what do you do? So, what's your advice to you know?
I think you really need to plan for it and think about it and fake it until you make it. It's you will meet people and you will build relationships and you'll find out that there are a lot more people than you think that are just as comfortable with more one-on-one, face-to-face, more of side conversations than sitting up here and doing this. This is scary, but you got to get past that. And I think everyone can. If I can, you all can.
I guess I would add 2 points to this. The first one is look at it as a conversation. You said the key word, people. They're just another person, right? So if you approach it not as an ask, but you approach it as a conversation and getting to know somebody else, just another person, kind of takes that down a little bit.
Right.
The second thing is a very wise person said this once to me. Come from contribution. When you're talking to somebody, it's all about them, not about you. We tend, when we get nervous, to say, I this, I that, and I do this, and because you're trying to build your confidence up in their eyes, you think, by talking about yourself. The person who controls the conversation is the person who asks the questions. So if you meet somebody, keep asking questions about them. About them. Not I do this and I do that. And I think once you get involved in the conversation, and if you keep that come from contribution in your head, then the conversation will flow. They'll get to know you. Repeat their name a lot. Repeat their name. That's a huge sales.
You are so
technique.
Good at that. And she's the master. I want to live with you.
Sit at your
seriously.
Sit at your feet
I
and learn.
I want to be with you all day long. I mean that.
And I make a mean lasagna too. I'll feed you.
You're gonna make my mother very jealous. She's sitting in the second row, who's like, get away from my dog.
But I wanted to also shoot it back to Dina, because we are going to take questions. So if you have questions, line up. While you're lining up, we'll let Nancy finish her point. But yes, if you have questions for the panel, anybody on here, ask us anything. AMA edition, you know. So yes, back to you, Nancy.
And I just want to personally thank everyone up here. You guys are really inspiring, amazing. Nancy and Rehana, Lovey, and Karen, thank you all so much. Please give them a round of applause. So I'll start it off. We're going to get to the question and answer. They wanted me to start off with a couple of questions. So here goes. Lovey,
yes.
I'm Judging You is your new book.
Yes.
Why, how, where? Tell us about it.
I'm judging us because I think we can do better.
Yes,
I think,
we can.
I think one of the things why this panel is important is because the people here have dedicated themselves to making the world a little bit better than they found it. So I wrote this book called I'm Judging You because I'm judging anybody who doesn't do that. And also I'm judging myself because I'm always late to stuff. My book was, my last chapter of my book is called Do Something That Matters, and it's where I challenge people to use their positions of privilege and the power that they have to make someone else's life a little bit better. And I think I have so much respect for the people who've committed themselves to that, and I feel like we're living in a world where it's a result of us thinking somebody else is going to fix it. So we, in every day of our lives, we can do something different that is going to push the world to be a little bit less crappy. So my book is essentially the manual on how not to suck as a human. And my excuse to be shady in 245 pages. I'm the worst.
No, you're the best.
Thank you.
So speaking of that awesome book, Lovey's going to be signing her book at the book signing right after this up in the down in the exhibit hall if anyone's interested. I, for one, will be first in the line, I hope. So anyone that wishes to answer, ask questions of the panel, please. We can start over here. Yes.
Hi, I'm Kristen Golden, and I'm from Friends of Children. And I first want to say follow Lovey in every format you possibly can.
Yes.
I get my everything from you. So
thank you.
Congratulations on your book. I followed your process of writing it.
You are the bomb.
My question is about crowdfunding for nonprofits. If you happen to be in the nonprofit universe, and we're creating a national campaign for youth aging out of foster care to get connected to people in their community in teams of up to 5 surrounding each youth, are there any tips for how to stand out in crowdfunding as a nonprofit, because there are so many worthy causes?
Yeah, and there are so many crowdfunding platforms for nonprofits. So if I'm being really honest, so crowdfunding, whether you're a for-profit or non-for-profit, comes down to what Nancy said, you and your brand and your relationships. And that's the only thing that's going to differentiate you. The platform, whether it's Kickstarter, Indiegogo, iFundWomen, you know, GoFundMe, you know, everybody's got their shtick. It comes down to you as the, you know, entrepreneur and as the face of the brand and your messaging and how many influential people with money you can reach IRL. That's the only way you're going to stand out.
I also think the power of stories. I can sit up here and tell you every 47 minutes a woman tests positive for HIV in the United States. Or I can tell you about the time when somebody emailed us and said, I have been married for 10 years, went and got a routine test, found out I was HIV positive. Have not told anybody, but I'm messaging your team because you guys can help me to figure out how to make this work. Tell a story that will connect people to what you're doing. That's going to show why this matters. Nancy's story hits because you now know what was behind this amplification and this work. Tell a good story.
Yeah.
That's the heart. That's it. Tell the story.
And thank video you. Helps, too.
Yeah. Tell people's stories.
Go on that side.
Thank you very much. So first, I want to profess my love for you, Karen. I just met you in this room, and you're freaking amazing. Thank you.
That's awesome.
So my question is for you and the others as well. Those of us working with groups who are constantly tapped for their resources and who are working on causes that really should be addressed by the mainstream, for example, health inequities, right? So I'm working with deaf youth. And I'm tired of asking deaf people to fund for improving services for the deaf community.
Yeah.
It needs to be more public health minded, right? So what advice can you give us to make that switch or to campaign elsewhere or to not tap the cultural linguistic minorities to support themselves, essentially?
I think that's a question for Nancy. That's a good one.
It's the critical piece in any cause, right, is that you're tapping the people who are most affected. You know, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but it's you got to tell the stories. You got to humanize it so that that's the one thing that Pete told us. I'm going to document my journey. So here's a Division I athlete that within 6 months was in a wheelchair. Mm. So we knew, okay, when we looked at our cause, Lou Gehrig was the face of our cause. Did anyone ever see Lou Gehrig in a wheelchair? No. Mm-mm. We all remember him standing in Yankee Stadium. So Pete was the one who said, we're going to document my progression because you make it relatable, right? So people say, well, I don't have a deaf person in my family. Is that relatable to me? Put them in a context that's relatable and tell their stories.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, and I just think as a follow-up that, so you've got, let's say your FFF, your Deaf FFF network is 50,000 people. I'm just picking a random number. All of those 50,000 hearing impaired individuals have their own story.
That's right.
Right? You've got to get them on video. You've got to get them in any format. And then their stories go out to their FFF networks, mm-hmm. and it spreads.
Mm-hmm. Just like the ice bucket.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Alyssa Noguera. I'm from Liberty Mutual. And just listening to all of you, you're all such go-getters. You just saw something and you went for it. And I always have this question for women who are so fierce in what they do, is that unfortunately, women who are go-getters don't get seen as go-getters. We get seen as bitches.
Yes.
So I was wondering, and like that's such a sad thing because it's not just coming from men, it's also coming from other women.
Cool.
So I was wondering, how do you combat that and what are your experiences with that?
I have an answer that I'm not allowed to, that block your ears, Nana. So I have started to give zero fucks what anybody thinks about
it. That's it.
And I think
that's it.
Zero fucks.
We are no fucks given.
Zero. Okay. We are at rock bottom as women in this country right now, in my personal and professional opinion. We have to stop caring what people think about us. You're a good person. I'm a good person. We're coming from a place of trying to do, you know, our life's work. If people think that I'm too aggressive or too loud or whatever, I don't care. I truly.
I sit up here as a black woman who's very opinionated, so you know.
Right, right.
I be getting that. But again, you just, it's not your business what people think of you. Speak your truth, do the work you want to do, how it lands. If you did it in the way that you deliberately wanted to do it, it is not your business how people thought about you afterwards.
That's awesome. Yeah.
If your agenda and intention is pure, look, people want to be critical of those that are not authentic. So just believe in what you, who you are every day. Don't give a fuck and go for it.
Yes. Nancy, goddamn it, yes. Yes.
So we've only got about 4 minutes left, so we'll try to get in
Nancy
as many questions as we can.
Okay, everything, all the things.
I know. She's so mad.
She told us. She told us before the panel started, so of course she had to do it.
I just have a quick, first of all, thank you. These are all wonderful. But talking about doing something small and talking about judging people and judging yourself, I realized that, and I'm in your bracket of age, that I waited to do philanthropy a lot of my life till I could write a check. And I started reevaluating that and saying you have to get people involved in philanthropy and doing good small things very young. And I have a great advantage in that I have a much older daughter and that I adopted a younger daughter. And I said, how am I going to get these kids involved in philanthropy? And so we do things like we cook as a family for Pine Street, and it can be something very small. But I started, so all of this brings me to an idea I have, which is how do you get youth involved in philanthropy? And we've actually started a group, just a limited group out in Metro West Boston called Youth in Philanthropy. And we have the kids decide who to give money to, you know, a pool of money. There's some high school kids. And so what I would say to everybody here, if you're an introvert, you still could do things. If you have kids, breed this young, because I think a lot of us have the mistake that we're going to do good things when we have the money. When we get older, now we got to make our living. And a lot of people don't have that, I'm saying, but I started judging myself that I was not putting my money where my mouth was. And I think one way to do it is try to breed a generation of kids who realize that these small things can have a big impact.
Yeah, and I think that that was the ice bucket in a nutshell, what you just said.
Yeah, exactly.
I've spoken at many philanthropic organizations because the Ice Bucket Challenge was a huge disruptor in philanthropy, because traditional philanthropy is, you know, you groom the big fish, you groom them, and then you ask, right? Mm-hmm. And we showed that you can get $1,000 by grooming a big fish for 6 months, or you can get 100 people to do $10 in 45 seconds, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing that the Ice Bucket Challenge did is exactly what you said. It got everyone involved in dipping their toes. 55% of the money that came in for Ice Bucket, which was $250 million, came from millennials, under 30. Now, the thing that speaks to is it was great for our cause, it's great for every cause.
Yes.
Because everybody did the Ice Bucket Challenge. There are a couple of elements in the Ice Bucket Challenge. Number one is the dichotomy with the disease that it represented. If you remember, I'm sure everybody in here either heard of it, did it, or knew somebody who did the Ice Bucket Challenge. What it was you got people you loved together. You got family or friends or one friend. And then you did, well, don't discount timing isn't everything in life. We did, you know, if the ice bucket came along in February in Boston,
you like, no,
might not have done what it did, but it was August, right? So how great was that? So timing was big on that. But then it was, you got to do something for somebody else. So there were parents bringing children.
And it was fun.
It was really fun. It was fun to do, and it was damn fun to watch other people's.
It really was.
And it brought joy. And then you got to explode that joy by giving $5, $10, whatever it is. Talk about a disruptor in social media. What do they say about social media? It's immediate gratification. Let's think about the Ice Bucket Challenge. First of all, in August, you had to find ice, right? So you had to go get the ice. Then you had to put it in something. Then you had to plan it because you had to videotape it, right? Then you had to videotape it. You videotaped it. Then you had to upload it.
Well, my generation uploading videos to Facebook, a little challenging, so you might have had to go find somebody. But this is the point. Then, this is before the don't, do you know that we ignited the donate button on Facebook?
On Facebook.
Oh, good. Yeah.
So after you uploaded your video, you had to go find out where you were going to give the money. You had to go explore different websites. We didn't say go to we said go to Pete's website. And on Pete's website, we listed our 501c3s plus Pete's trust fund was on that. So then you had to go into the website, and then you had to donate. So it completely blew apart that whole thing. And it was funny because that donate button was a direct, came straight from the Ice Bucket Challenge when we met with Facebook. So it really is a good new world after Ice Bucket as far as philanthropy goes, because it changed the whole course of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great way to end this panel. Thank you so much for this. Y'all are amazing.